You are listening to the Sideline SaaS Podcast, episode 36, post-draft chat. The 2020 NFL draft came and went, and this episode is dedicated to the fallout. First, I chat with Dolphins running back Miles Gaskin about his new teammates, and we take a little walk down Pac-12 memory lane to discuss his favorite UW moments. Spoiler alert, they do include the Apple Cup. Then I talk with my friend and fellow sports writer, Chrissy Freud, who covers LSU and the Tennessee Titans for the USA Today News Group. We discuss Joe Burrow, we grade the Titans draft, and we talk about Chrissy's affinity for writing about quarterbacks. But first, some housekeeping stuff. Hey guys, Emily Van Buskirk here. Welcome to the Sideline SaaS Podcast. If this is your first time listening, I'm glad you found me. The Sideline SaaS Podcast is generally produced every 2 weeks just for you, and the show notes can be found on the episode page at audioboom.com. Make sure you hit that subscribe button on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, pretty much anywhere you can listen to podcasts, and feel free to rate and review. Let your girl know how she's doing. If you feel like getting social as well as sassy, make sure to follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at Sideline Sass with three S's. Or if you're like my mom and prefer a more wholesome connection, go ahead and like the show on Facebook. If you like what you hear and want to see more, check out the website www.sidelinesass.com with three S's for more sports content. Feel free to follow the Sass on my personal account at Emilnem, E-M-I-L-N-E-M, on both Twitter and Instagram. If you didn't catch all that, no worries. All those links and handles can be found in the show notes. Let's get this party started. Guys, I am joined now by a familiar name for a lot of my listeners. Those of you that are Pac-12 football fans are going to be really excited to hear from this guy. He is Miles Gaskin, former running back from Washington and now with the Miami Dolphins. Welcome to the podcast, Miles.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Of course, we're excited to, always excited to get to talk to a Pac-12 guy after he goes into the league because, you know, we have to stick together as Pac-12 football fans, you know?
Always.
And
they hate on us.
They do. They really do. And one of the cool things, though, that I see about the Dolphins and looking at the roster particularly is that there's a lot of Pac-12 players on the team.
Mm-hmm. There's three in just my room alone. Patrick Laird, Kalen Ballage. Pat went to Cal. Mm-hmm. Kalen went to Arizona State. So, look. When we get to jawing back and forth in the room, but it's all good love.
And Patrick has had an interesting kind of rise to where he is now. Like, obviously, his story was a walk-on at Cal, and now he's, you know, and they call him the intern, which I literally just read that about that name. Yeah. Is that, were you there when he told that story?
Absolutely. which is ridiculous. He's a great athlete. Obviously, he's on the NFL team, mm-hmm. but, like, he knows. I think what people don't understand about that is, like, Pat knows everything to know about everything.
He's like Google.
Yeah, so, like, people, I don't know what they see, but, like, for me, from the outside in, I think it's hilarious because I know, like, the guys that probably said, oh, like, what do you do here? And it's just jokes. It's like, man, you guys have no idea.
For people who don't know the story, some of my listeners might not know, so I'm just going to recap it really quick just because it's funny. Patrick Laird was at the facility late one night and he was having late dinner. And I guess he was so late that all of these operation interns were there eating when he was eating. So he sits down with them. And like you said, they asked him who he was and they had no idea that he was like a football player. They thought he was kind of one of them.
Yeah, no idea. He was going out there practicing every day.
That's such a Patrick Laird story, and I'd never heard that until I Googled it. But that's just the kind of guy that he is, and so that must be nice to have fellow Pac-12 players on the team, so you don't get ganged up on by these like Auburn and Clemson and Georgia guys.
Yeah, it's nice.
So obviously, we're in this unique time in the country. Dealing with, you know, COVID and the keeping ourselves, our distance, and staying inside as much as we can. But how has this been for you training-wise? Are you still able to get the things done that you need and have been working on yourself?
Yes, definitely. I mean, obviously, it's definitely a struggle to find, like, a good gym and whatnot, and if there is a gym open in certain places. And then we were able to, at my parents' house, we already have, like, a good amount of weights kind of laying around from when I was in high school. So that's what I do, kind of the gym in the garage type. But, I mean, you kind of figure it out. I think everybody's just figured it out by now. But definitely on the front end, it was kind of like a panic of, oh, man, I need this, I need that, I need this, I need that. Or I don't have this. So I think everybody, they're definitely on the Dolphins, I think everybody's definitely come to a good schedule, a good kind of makeshift weight room, so.
And you guys are using Zoom meetings and all that stuff too, I'm assuming?
Yep, Zoom.
Did you ever think you'd be this technologically inclined as part of your job?
I mean, not to play football.
Right.
I think it's probably helping a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But it's cool though. I think the fact that technology is being able to help pretty much everybody in the world, I think we need to appreciate it a little bit more than we have in the past. And, I mean, it's able to keep most people feeling as normal as possible during these times.
Yeah, that's very true. Is there one person maybe in your group of players or coaches that is less savvy than everybody else that kind of struggles with it? Like the grandpa of the group?
I'd probably say my coach.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably say Coach E, but I don't know. Sometimes his computer should be jacked up. So I don't want to give it to him. I don't want to sell him out. So I just blame it on the computer.
Okay, technical difficulties. Yeah.
Yeah, technical.
We all get that. So let's backtrack, and I want to give people a little bit of a idea of how we got connected. We have a mutual friend, and he actually, Wiz, does the music. I know, I always call him by his stage name. I know that's weird, but that's like who he is to me.
Everybody does, don't worry.
He does the music for my podcast, so he gives me all of the tracks and the beats, and I get to use it, and he's a very talented guy, but you've known him for a couple years now. You want to talk about how you guys met and maybe your relationship?
So I met him, so I guess I met him when I was in like seventh grade because my brother was at O'Day.
Oh, wow.
He's been in O'Day for I don't even know how long. He's just one of those guys you can kind of lean on, knows all the history about O'Day, high school, and being an O'Day guy, I don't think a lot of people probably don't know what I'm talking about. It's an all-guys Catholic school in the heart of Seattle. And it's really big on brotherhood and all that type of stuff. And he's one of those guys you can talk to about anything. And if you want to go argue about sports and whatever you want. I think he's one of those guys for myself. When I was at O'Day, he was one of those guys that, like, was somebody to vent to or somebody to just kind of, like, hang out with, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, in high school, you got all these emotions and all everything, you know, young guy. Just kind of like figuring it all out.
Did he give you good girl advice?
I don't know about that one, but he gave me good other advice.
Okay.
Pretty much everything else, but I don't think I can do on no girl advice.
That's fair. I love it. And then he ended up, I don't know if like you were at Washington first or he was there first, but he was DJing or he was MCing the games. Was that during your time?
Yes, it was. It was the craziest thing when I was a freshman. It was my first home game, so he did all the home games.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew he was there, but like I was so locked in. I'm freshman. I'm not a redshirt, so I'm playing, and like I'm doing my warm up. And he like kind of like jumps on. Like, hey man, how you been? Because I haven't seen him since I graduated high school.
Mm-hmm.
And like that just like kind of loosened me up. He's like, man, you gonna do your thing. Everything and whatnot, and then actually my very first college home game, I think I had like 3-4 touchdowns.
Yeah, you had quite the start to your collegiate career.
I might have needed that hometown love, that O'Day love, helped me get through that.
That's awesome. And he was a big presence. Obviously, you were a big man on campus and in your time there, but Wiz was like the guy, you know, he has like an energy that's contagious. And he really, I think, helped I've seen him in action in the home games. Was that something that would like fire you up, having him on the mic?
I think so. I definitely would say so, but I think it's just because me and him went to the same high school. And like I said, it's like the O'Day connect. You know, it's like one of those people, they're like, oh, we got this connected. Nobody else know. Like, you know,
yeah.
So yeah. I think that's the type of vibe I was really on. But I know everybody else really rocked with him when he was on the mic, kind of DJing the games and whatnot. But me and him, like, when I was telling you about that story, from then on, every home game, I'd dap him up. We chopped up for like a heartbeat. Obviously, I was on the move. But
yeah.
I think those kind of times would kind of center me or just kind of loosen me up in a sense like, oh, yeah, we got to go out here and ball and just have fun.
That's awesome. Well, now we talk about, he told me that there was a DJ. When you were at Washington, did you guys have a stadium DJ by any chance?
A stadium DJ, like during practice?
Yeah, no, like during the game, so someone that would play music. I'm going to take it
DJ
as
a Super Sam?
Yeah. Yeah. So you would have somebody that would, like, play music, like, live before the game and, like, hype you guys up, right?
Yeah, during the warm-up.
Yeah.
And during the game. DJ Super Sam, I listened to DJ Super Sam my whole life.
He's the Seahawks DJ too, right?
Yep,
yeah.
Yep, yep.
So I don't know if you know this, but maybe when you traveled to other schools, a lot of places didn't have their own DJ to play games, like play music before the game. Did you guys work with him and like create, like did he play music that you guys liked based off of a list that you gave him or did he just know?
I think he just know.
Yeah.
I think he's a good DJ, so.
He is good.
Yeah. That's probably why other schools didn't have as much fun as us.
I think so. Well, that and your guys' stadium is kind of epic.
Yeah. We had a lot of fun.
Did you ever get to go, even though you were a player, did you ever get to experience, like, going out in the sailgating? Like, obviously you couldn't do it on a game day, but did you guys ever get to go out there where they do sailgate?
When I was young, I used to go to games.
Okay.
When I was young, one of my best friends when we were at O'Day was Ben Holt, and his dad at the time, so his dad, Nick Holt, was the DC at UW.
Okay.
So I kind of had been seeing, like, the whole Dog Saturday in a full effect from when I was, like, in freshman in high school. I got to see all the sailgating.
Yeah.
The tailgating, all that type of stuff. So I think that's kind of when I started kind of falling in love with UW, but wasn't sure.
And okay.
Come full circle.
I mean, obviously, being in your home environment is such a big, you know, plus when you're looking at a school to play at because they are close to family and it's familiar. But was there another school that you looked at besides UW that you thought maybe you could play at?
I've told this story.
Oh, I don't think I've heard this.
Every time I tell this story, I kind of get more and more embarrassed.
Oh, no.
But when I was in high school, like I was talking about earlier, just being a young dude, I thought I wanted to go to Arizona State.
Oh, boy.
Just to go party. When I was 17, though, I got my first offer from UW. Actually, my first offer was from UW, like kind of coming up, and I was like, I want to go to Arizona State. I want to go to Arizona State. My mom and dad were like, what are you talking about? Like, we don't know anybody who lives in Arizona. There's nothing, like, like, why would you want to go?
Yeah.
And then I got my first offer from UW, I want to say, like, a month after Coach Pete got the job. Yeah, it was a month after Coach Pete got the job because I was a junior.
Right.
I ended up committing, like, 2 weeks later.
Okay. So you didn't really entertain it for that long.
Yeah, my mom was like, yeah, you're staying home. There's no reason for you to leave the state of Washington. You got this great university.
Yeah.
You got this great new coach. And I couldn't thank her more to this day.
ASU might have turned out a little different. It's a fun school, but they definitely, of all the Pac-12 schools that I've covered, their students go the hardest of all of them. It's like,
that is exactly why I wanted to go there when I was 17.
It's impressive, to be honest. Well, now you see Herm Edwards there, and that's a pretty interesting coaching change they made, and I wasn't sure it was going to stick, but it's kind of cool to see an NFL veteran coach like that in the Pac-12.
Right, yeah, it is. We lost to them when he was there. So.
Did you really?
I think so, my junior year.
I would have to go pull up the schedule.
Yeah, check that one.
Of all the Pac-12 schools, which was one of the most fun that you would travel to play? Or I mean, obviously, and you can leave the Apple Cup out of this because we're going to talk about that separate. But of all the other, like Stanford or Cal or Colorado.
I'd probably say Oregon because they hate
Yeah. Yep.
From both sides. We don't like this. We don't like that.
I know. Oregon fans are crazy, right?
You got to love it, though. I think that's what makes football at the end of the day. Like, the fans, the love of the game from everybody sitting in there. So, it's fun. It was fun. Always fun playing over there in Oregon.
Do you think it was louder at your place or at their place? That they get loud.
It was the loudest I've ever played was when we played Stanford my sophomore year.
Really?
So I'd say that's the loudest I've ever played in. But also my sophomore year when we played Oregon, I will say it was pretty damn loud. That's a close second.
Yeah, those are some big-time schools, obviously. Yeah. You guys battling it. The North was always a battle, and now we're kind of seeing – you know, I don't know how much you watched Pac-12 this last year, but it was a little bit of a role reversal because we saw a lot of South, you know, good South teams, Utah battling out, USC kind of having this resurgence. What did you think of the North this year?
I can't lie to you. The only team I watched is UW.
Fair enough.
I watched was the squad. But
that's fair.
I always liked Pac-12 football.
Yeah.
I mean, just because this is where I kind of grew up.
And yeah.
It's good. It's always good to see teams get better. I mean,
yes.
SC hadn't been SC for a while.
Agreed.
I grew up, when I was watching SC, I was looking at Reggie Bush.
Yeah. Those were the days.
Obviously, you want to see every team at the top of their game, so it just brings out the best in everybody else. So.
Yeah. What did you think of the national championship game this year between Clemson and LSU? Did you watch that?
I did watch that. I thought that was a great game.
Right?
I think LSU caught everybody by surprise. Mm-hmm. Kind of like halfway through the season. I didn't think people kind of respected LSU as much as they should have. And then kind of towards the end, they were all on bandwagon. But LSU was balling the whole year, so... I have my money on LSU from the jump.
Yeah. Well, and it's fun because you actually, the Dolphins drafted their long snapper, Blake Ferguson, mm-hmm. who is a good friend of my podcast. He's been on here before, and he's an incredible guy, but he's just like the biggest LSU fan you'll ever meet. His brother went there. They played long snapper after each other, but you'll have to tell Blake I say hi, and you got to ask him, all right, when you meet him. And you give him shit for this. He, after the game, he was running around the field and he was trying to find one of those signs, you know, that say like national champions that the people were holding. And he managed to grab one and he carried it around the rest of the night and took it home with him.
I'm not mad at him. I ain't mad at him.
You got to give him some grief for me, but because he's just a goofy guy, but really, really nice kid. And you guys got a lot of good draft picks. Did you watch the draft this year?
I watched and I stayed tuned for whenever we were up.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of hard. I mean,
yeah.
I was kind of hard. Obviously, with this COVID, everybody's going through their own struggles, but my heart goes out to those guys that didn't get the full effect. But, I mean, it's theirs. They can own it. They can say that this is what happened when I was getting drafted. But, I mean, it was hard to watch in the sense of just kind of getting the full experience. But
did it bring any memories back for you of draft day?
Definitely. I mean, just the process, just seeing people getting their name called. Obviously, I mean, when I was getting the draft day, I was so concerned just to get my name called. And now realizing that it's not so much about getting to the league, it's about staying in the league. But mm-hmm. but...
Fair enough.
I was super happy to just see those smiles. Like, I cried on draft day just to hear my name. It was a great feeling to be with my family and seeing those guys get to be with their families. I mean, every single one of the guys that went to any team, I mean, it's just it just puts a smile on your face. I mean, not too many people. I mean, what did I say? It's like less than 1% that get that call and even get to NFL. So, I mean, you got to just have love for just that moment, that day in itself.
I'm sure you saw the clips. There were a lot of funny clips about girlfriends going around and some of the girls some of the girlfriends made a name for themselves. Was that pretty funny to see, right?
Yeah, it was funny. Awkward, but it's funny.
The CeeDee Lamb one I thought was pretty clever because he had some quick hands to get the bat phone back.
That fun. I love it.
Yeah, it was that honestly, stuff like that, though, because you knew there was going to be weird kind of stuff that happens whenever you do like a live, you know, video broadcast. But I was surprised more people didn't have any, you know, malfunctions. It seemed to go pretty smoothly as far as...
It did. It did look... It looked well. I mean...
Yeah.
Obviously, just like just the importance of it. I mean, you'd hate to see it go off of a stalling screen or yeah. something froze or something like that.
yeah. So or somebody said something they weren't supposed to.
yeah, exactly. So,
so if you were going to be in this year's draft, right, and you're waiting for your name to be called and you had one of those cameras on you, would you, first of all... I'm assuming you'd have your family around you, right?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Would you have opted for, like, a relaxed look, or do you think you might have dressed up a little bit and kind of, like, mimicked draft red carpet night?
I would have went exactly how I went to my, did mine last year in a t-shirt and shorts.
okay. That's fair. Comfortable over fashion. I got you.
Yeah. It's a big day. It's a lot of nerves and whatnot. I mean... You don't be sweating in no brand new suit.
That's fair. That's very fair. But, okay, but if you were going to be on a red carpet for an event like that, are you more of a, you know, flash kind of guy or like a traditional suit kind of guy?
For draft day, I'll probably go a little flashy.
A little flashy? Okay.
Yeah. Actually, probably super flashy. It's once in a lifetime.
Right?
You only get to do it once.
There, and last year, there was a lot of interesting fashions. I don't know if you remember, but like Devin Bush had this really interesting... like crossover suit, and then we had, you know, some guys in sparkles, and then Chase Young at the Heisman this last year had the sparkly bow tie. So it's always fun to see guys like kind of put on like that.
Yeah, have fun with it. Like I said, you don't get that day one time.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
So are you excited to be working with Tua Tagovailoa? That's obviously a big, you know, everyone's been talking about him going to the Dolphins and stuff. Really fun, really nice guy, big energy. Are you excited to have him join the team?
Absolutely. I don't know. I've only heard stories about him from media. Like, I don't know anything about him outside of just kind of like the things you see on TV. So I can't wait to meet him as a dude, as a person.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, everything he brought to Alabama when he was playing, it was amazing. I mean, I've watched football since, I've been watching football probably since I was 5 years old.
yeah.
Definitely the best Alabama quarterback I've seen, probably one of the best SEC quarterbacks I've seen. And he's really good.
Yep, he is
so
good.
I can't wait to get in the room with him, talk to him, let him pick my brain or myself pick his brain, mm-hmm. see what he sees. But like I said, I can't wait to get into a room.
in general.
yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure. What was it like going from obviously growing up in Seattle on the West Coast, and Seattle's like gnarly West Coast in the sense that the weather is always kind of, you know, not a lot of sunshine all the time. It's rain and clouds. And then you're going to Miami, you know, you're in Florida, which is the complete opposite. What was that like, that transition?
I loved it, to be honest. I love Florida. Mm-hmm. I love the South. I got a lot of family in the South. I got a lot of people in Atlanta.
Okay.
But I will tell you, there's some things that you will never see. Like, there's iguanas. I swear there's more iguanas than squirrels in Florida.
Did you see any, like, crocodiles or alligators?
Yeah, so I just got a dog. I got a dog after the season.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to take my dog on all these walks, just kind of walking around lakes and stuff like that. And it's crazy. You'll see, like, a gator in, like, just a pond or whatever. And you, like, see it looking at your dog. It's not looking at you. It's looking at your dog like a snack. And it's like, damn, like...
oh, my
like,
God.
This dude is just waiting to eat my dog. Like,
do you think you could out... I mean, you're one of the fastest guys I've ever seen. Do you think you could outrun a crocodile? Alligator?
They say alligators. They say crocodile, alligator, whichever one they are, can run up to 30
either way.
I don't think... I don't think I'm outrunning them, but I'm definitely getting up out of there.
Okay, I don't think they can run sideways or make cuts, so maybe if you do some exactly. quick lane cuts, you'd be good.
Exactly. You got to get up out of there.
That's crazy. What kind of dog did you get?
A little pit bull mix, but aww. I got her off Craigslist, so she's, I don't know what exactly for she is, but she's a nice dog. She's super nice. Lazy dog, though.
She's
all day.
Are you going to get her DNA tested and see what she is, or are you just accept
nah,
her?
I'm just love her for her.
Love her for her. I love it. What's her name?
Bean.
Oh, my gosh. That's so cute.
Yeah.
That is adorable. It's good to have a dog during this time because it's exactly. something to hold on to, you know?
Right.
Okay, now I want to ask you about the Apple Cup. Obviously, this is something that a lot of people, especially outside the Pac-12, don't understand. Now, they know it's a big rivalry game, right? It's definitely up there ranked. But the animosity between these two programs and just how much that game is circled on the calendar is crazy. And you're kind of unique because I think you went undefeated in Apple Cups, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely.
So you never lost one.
Nah. Hell nah.
So
that's the thing. Like what you said, like I'm kind of torn between what you said in the sense of the animosity. I really don't have any animosity.
Right.
I went to Wazoo because I have no reason to.
Right.
So like.
That's fair.
It's a huge rivalry. All my life I've known it. But like, I don't know. Like we've always kind of always beat up on them. So I really can't say that there's that much animosity. I always have fun though. I always love playing down there.
It's crazy in Pullman.
Yeah, I always love playing down there. I always used to see like people I went to high, some of the dudes I went to high school with. Mm-hmm. And you see everybody like kind of grow up going to parties with or mm-hmm. playing against them or just kind of just like around the city. A lot of people from Washington.
Yeah.
Or UW, but like a lot of people I knew for some reason all went to Washington State.
That's so funny.
You see them in the stands, and like very obviously they've been drinking, having their fun, coming up to the game. So they feeling tough in the stands, talking, like calling me by name, calling my friends by name.
Oh, boy. Like,
it's definitely one of them environments that you can't sleep on at all. Like it's a lot of fun.
It's really, yeah. Pullman, I've heard from people that have played there, is just it's a sneaky, hard place to play. And it's cold. Like that's the other thing is it could be snowing there. That's insane. But did you ever have any interesting, you know, conversations or run-ins or chats with Mike Leach during your time?
No, I never shared. I don't even think I shared the same space with him outside of just being across the field.
That's so funny because usually he's like all over the place. You never know what you're going to get with him. But I guess you've seen enough of the videos of him, though.
Oh, yeah. He is hilarious.
It's a bummer that he's hilarious. Gone now and he's in, you know, Mississippi State. He's going to be out of the Pac-12. So,
yeah.
It's all good, though. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. And I'm glad we connected. And I have one thing for you you can say to Tua when you see him. He's a huge Migos fan. Loves Migos. Oh, yeah. So do you remember he was in a boot? I want to say 2 years ago at the College Football Awards, he was in a boot at the Heisman. And I ran into him there and he had a little scooter, right? And he's scooting around the awards. And every time he would turn a corner, he would make that noise, that skirt, skirt. And he'd be like, and he would just say Migos.
Yeah.
He loves it. He's just a
all right, for sure.
Yeah, you got to tell him.
I like Migos.
Yeah, I'll send you the video and you can show it to him because it made him, he died laughing. He was like, I don't know, I'm just trying to make people laugh. And that's kind of who he is, so.
Cool, I can't wait.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again, Miles. And we will, hopefully we can check in with you during the season and talk about how that's going and can't wait to see you put some numbers up on the board.
Can't wait.
All right, what a great interview with Dolphins running back Miles Gaskin. Awesome of him to join us during this quarantine time and talk about what's going on with his training and the Dolphins looking into the NFL season. But now we're going to switch gears. Well, not really switch gears, but it's about to get a whole lot funnier up in here because I've got one of my girls coming on. Chrissy Freud covers football for the USA Today Sports group, and she's specifically with Titans and LSU, so she knows a ton about those two teams, but she knows a lot about everything, and she's a QB master. Everything about the quarterback, she interviews them in all of her spare time. So welcome, Chrissy, to the Sideline Sass podcast.
Hey, thanks.
That was like... That was the introduction to end all introductions, and that is the only response I get. Are you kidding? I feel like I need to be the hype person for your life after that. Come on.
I know. I feel like I've just talked so much lately that I'm just like.
We did have quite the extensive pre-podcast interview. I think it was almost an hour long. So this should be interesting to see how we can translate all of that. Yeah, exactly. Like, to see what we can actually talk about on air instead of off air. But let's start with the draft, because you and I, obviously, we started talking a lot recently about leading up to the draft, about who we were interviewing and all that kind of stuff. And then as it went on and you were doing stuff for the Titans, covering their specific class, what was the virtual draft like for you?
The draft is always a super busy time for us, USA Today Sports Media Group, because there's so many different angles mm-hmm. to hit on all these players that we're drafting,
right.
NFL-wise. And then being with the college division now, LSU had 14 guys go. So it was just like back to back. It's like, do you ever, you know, that game at Chuck E. Cheese, it's like called whack-a-mole or something. So every single
yes,
time
I
that
played
someone
whack-a-mole,
gets drafted,
right? I'm not that old.
Yeah. So like every time that someone gets drafted, there's like five angles you can hit on them,
yeah.
and you're trying to do as much as you possibly can. And it's like, you've whacked all the moles and like all their heads are down, and then someone else gets drafted again. It's just, oh my gosh. Like, it's rewarding, but it just got so just
it was a lot.
Tedious.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Like, you're happy to have done it, but going through the draft itself, like, and that's the other thing too, is I like doing more in-depth things. Like, I mm-hmm. like to have something and be like, oh, this has a lot of meaning to it. Like, if you look at my Twitter, like, you'll see some of the stuff I've done, but for every one article I post, there's probably 10 that I didn't, because I just do so much
right.
every single day. And so, like, that's one thing that I guess I don't like about covering the draft, like, on the day, is that you can't really, like, you're trying to keep up
yeah.
so much that you don't really get to go in depth until later.
Yeah, that's
true.
And then
by the time that it becomes later, then you're so tired from it that you wait, like, a few more days to, like, okay, let me get my bearings again. But yeah, I mean, it was fun. There was a lot going on. I hated the Titans' first pick until I realized that my pick one became second rounder. And I was like, oh, John Robinson does know what he's doing. yeah, like, he's a GM for a reason, and I'm not.
Yeah, well, there you go.
but yeah, so, I mean, it was kind of crazy. I was supposed to be at the draft this year.
Right.
So, I mean, it was a little bit upsetting. So, like, selfishly, I was annoyed with that. I think a lot of people secretly were, but I wouldn't say it.
Okay, I have a big question about that, because obviously last year in Nashville was incredible, and to have the draft there, it was like the perfect setup, having it down Broadway and like end at the end of the street and the concerts and everything. They did like the best job ever. And I know Vegas was being hyped up to be this incredible experience as well. Although the logistics of it, I was interested to see, because I don't know how that was going to work the way that they said it was. Do you think that Vegas was really going to top Nashville, or in my opinion, it was just a lot of hype and wasn't going to be as good?
I agree with you on the logistics aspect. Like, there were a few things about it that I was just like, how is that going to work? Like, how is it going to be reasonable? Like, is it going to be too slow moving?
Right.
With the way that they were doing it, mm-hmm. are they only going to do it with like the first rounders? Like, that was one of my initial questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it might have been a cool atmosphere, and like Vegas is Vegas, so it has that going for it.
Yeah.
But I don't. The way that Nashville really showed out, I don't think anybody quite expected it to be like of those proportions.
Yeah.
But
it was a party. It was like a full on street
yeah.
party. And like the NFL pulled out all the stops. Like, they had Tim McGraw performing and all of this really cool. They had Jim Moore up on stage throwing footballs. Like, it was such a cool, like, organic thing that clearly they planned it out, but the way that it happened, it felt really like right. And I just feel like Vegas, there's so many other things going on. It was going to feel like forced and like, you know, I don't know. I was excited, but I wasn't, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I
agree. It's a lot. Vegas is a lot.
I think it's going to be a long time before anybody really outdoes
Nashville. I agree with you. And man, how are we going to cover 3 or 4 days of the draft in Vegas and not die? Like, what?
Yeah.
Realistically, that's just not like, how is that going to happen?
Yeah. No.
Too much trouble.
Lots of trouble.
Lots of trouble. So were you excited to see Fulton go to the Titans?
Yes. Yes. Because, and he was in my mock draft.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the wrong rounds.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had issues in the past with mocking players correctly. Not because I'm stupid or anything, but because, but it's
no.
just, there's so many things, there's so many things that we think teams are going to do ahead of the draft sometimes, and then half of it ends up being like, oh, wow, that came out of nowhere. Oh, that was a surprise. Mm-hmm. Like, if I took a shot for every single time that somebody said that on TV, like, I would be dead. We would. Because it just happens so often. Like, it's so hard to predict, and then there's always that at least – a few guys that were supposed to definitely be first rounders, according to quite literally everyone, and then they slide like a third or fourth round, and we're like,
right,
what happened?
Yeah.
But I thought the cornerback was of utmost importance for the mm-hmm. Titans, just given just the overall uncertain futures of Adoree Jackson and then Malcolm Butler mm-hmm. and the potential for Logan Ryan being out of the fold, and we've learned this week that he is definitely out of the fold, so they needed another guy there, and I thought that Fulton was best available for where they were,
right.
But I thought that they were making a huge mistake whenever they drafted that Georgia offensive tackle in the first round, because I thought for sure that Fulton would definitely not be around.
Dude, that kid is a beast, though. Like, and I don't know, like, it's hard with the tackles, you know, because they all feel like they're giant, and they're all like the same. It's hard to put value on what makes one better than the other. But that guy is like a 40-year-old man. I'm sorry, but like that guy was good job, because no one's going near that kid. Like, he's huge.
Yeah, and from what I've seen, like from what I've looked into with him, like he looks like he's an absolute like freak of nature.
Yeah.
Just based on some things that he can do. So I think it was a good pickup. And then with Jack Conklin going to Cleveland, they definitely needed to replace him with someone who could fill that void, because Conklin had his downtime, but he was really, really on the upswing before he departed. And so you want to not regress in that area. And I mean, any offensive line pick is going to be boring. Yeah. I don't think anybody's going to go, oh, thank God we showed that offensive lineman.
Even though they're so important and not enough, they get no love. And that's what I was talking to Josh Jones about on my podcast, is like, oh, linemen get no love, but they are like literally, dare say, more important than the quarterback. Because if you can't protect them, then what are you doing? You know, look at Andrew Luck. Biggest O-line fail ever there with the Colts. I thought it was good, though. And I agree with you. That's interesting about so you think Fulton's going to thrive there?
Yeah, I think so. I actually talked to him not too long ago mm-hmm. about being with the Titans. He said that he was excited to be a part of that secondary, and I think that he can do good things there. I think mm-hmm. that his strength is man coverage, and that he'll be able to thrive in that environment. The only other guy that I was thinking that they could have that might have done maybe not as well initially, but another cornerback that I was really looking at was Cameron Dantzler. Mm-hmm. The only thing that concerns me about him is his frame and how he would play a man.
Right.
But, yeah.
That's good. That's what we call hashtag analysis, everybody.
Yeah.
And then I saw you tweeting about good old Cole McDonald. Love me the Hawaii QB. And you're going to write something about him possibly. What are your thoughts on the Titans picking him up?
Yeah, he's one that I'm starting to really look into, because it's funny, because I was telling the other person I work with at Titans, Mike Moritis, we were talking about, because I was just like absolutely swamping myself ahead of the draft with all these. I did a breakdown, which was sometimes like damn near 1,000 words on some of these guys.
Yeah.
And I'd write the feature stories on them, and it was just, I loved it,
yeah.
But it was exhausting.
It's a lot.
Like, that's like my area, but it gets exhausting. And so like the one guy that I was going to do, the one I was going to try to fit in right before the draft started was Cole. Mm-hmm. And I was like, something in my gut's telling me that it's going to be Cole McDonald or James Morgan. I have Morgan. I've done work on Morgan. But I feel like they might take Cole.
Yeah.
And it's going to bite me because I haven't done anything on him ahead of the draft, and
right.
Sure enough, he took Cole.
But, yep.
I mean, from what I can see, like he appears to be a pretty solid prospect, and
yes.
He has some good mobility. I'm not going to go as far as to say like, oh, he definitely reminds me of Marcus Mariota, but I think he brings some of the same traits that Mariota had, and he said that he idolized Marcus Mariota, I read somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, in general, the backup quarterback position is something that the Titans haven't really prioritized the way that I think they should in the past. Like, obviously, I'm not in the front office. I don't know what goes into every single decision that they make.
Right.
But they've had a lot of players at the quarterback position that have started, and they end up relying on the backup because they bench the guy,
mm-hmm.
or because he gets hurt or something, and then the backup is just something tremendously terrible that just tanks the entire team for the rest of the season, or has at least a very heavy hand in doing that. Like, yeah. You can't tell me that Blaine Gabbert's bad performances were not a major factor in some of the Titans' losses.
Yeah. Like, oh, Blaine Gabbert.
Blaine did some dumb things.
Yeah.
Like, there are times that he would do things that made me question, like, how much he actually knew football. Like, obviously, you're in the NFL, but he tried to throw two passes on one play with each hand, which you cannot do, and did not complete either one of them.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what?
What are you doing, bud?
What are you doing? It's like, and another guy that I think of whenever I think of stuff like that is Blake Bortles. And he was just so tremendously inconsistent. Like, his lows were worse than some high school quarterbacks I've seen.
Yeah.
And then some of his highs made me think, like, oh my goodness, like,
yeah.
He should be a starting quarterback forever. Like, this is definitely the Jaguars guy.
Yeah.
But,
people didn't know what to do with him. When he had his final, you know, games in college, people were like, and myself included, we were like, this is the dude. Look, I mean, when they beat Baylor, that was like a huge deal. And in the bowl game, in his last bowl game, and everyone's like, okay, this is the guy. And he's built like the guy. Like, he looks like Roethlisberger. Like, he could withstand it. He'd be okay at the next level. But it just goes to show you that you don't always know what someone's ceiling is and what they're capable of handling and what they're not capable of handling, which is why the concerns about Tua, I think, were very fair to begin with. Now, you've always, if I remember correctly, you've been a pro Tua person, correct?
Yeah. I've always thought that Burrow was the better prospect overall, like, as far as translating to the NFL and injury history and stuff like that. But I mean, I view Tua as just a rare player. Like, the same way that I would look at someone, it's kind of a weird comparison because it's not the same position.
Mm-hmm.
But Derek Stingley is another guy who I look at, and there's just something about them that's rare.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just that you don't see every day. And one thing that I specifically like about Tua is his athleticism and his ability to evade pressure, because we look at those two traits and, like, they're positive traits and they're traits that a lot of good quarterbacks have. But there's just something that's almost, like, unnatural about his ability to do that, his ability to extend a play.
Right.
That I look at, and it's just those rare physical gifts like that. And then Jordan Love is another.
I know. You were big. You're big Jordan Love supporter. I was not. Not that he's a bad guy. Just not a fan of his play. But what was it that stuck with you about him specifically?
About Jordan?
Yeah. Like, why did you like how he plays? It was hard to tell. Like, he didn't have, in my opinion, that impressive of tape, you know?
Well, I think where Jordan's main strength lies is his ability to throw the deep ball.
Okay.
And just how the tightness of some of these windows that he's managed to stick it in is just, it's unbelievable. I honestly don't think that I've covered another quarterback this season that was able to pin it just right there the way that he was able to do it. I know that he had kind of I pass it off as a fluke season because of just all the changes that Utah State underwent within the roster, and then some of the coaching as well.
Yeah.
And he had that really horrible touchdown interception ratio.
Yeah.
So I don't know. There's something that's so appealing to me about these high risk, high reward players.
Okay.
And so he's somebody that I feel like he's either going to be really, really good.
Yeah. Or it's going to go down in flames.
Yeah. Or it's going to go down in flames very quickly. Because if his last season of college football is an indication of what his pro career is going to be, he's absolutely going to tank.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to wish that I didn't have my name affiliated with this anyway.
But if he does really well and has this long career, then you're going to look like a genius. So there you go.
Yeah. The only thing I'm concerned about him, poor guy, is that he's with Aaron Rodgers, and I don't know. Like, I mean, I've never personally worked with Aaron, but just some of the reports I've read, some of the things that I've just heard about his character in general, just all the news that's been out there about just how he is.
I want to say to that, because I've heard that as well, and I've worked with Aaron a handful of times. I've interviewed him. I've had one-on-ones with him for, you know, a decent chunk of time we've talked. And I've seen, I've been around him in media settings and seen him and everything. And my experience with him is he's always been really great. He's treated the people around him great. He was phenomenal to work with, very like nice and helpful and easygoing. And everyone that I talked to that, you know, was in proximity to him really liked him. You know, he was playing golf with Larry Fitzgerald in Pebble Beach, and I talked to them and their other guys that they golfed with, and everyone just had the best things to say about him, you know? So I don't know. Like, I hear those things as well, but my experience has always been great. Now, obviously you can't, you know, you have to really know somebody to know what their true nature is. But I don't understand all those negative reviews of him being an asshole, because I can't put that together with the guy that I've talked to, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll just say if there's any merit to that, then I'm concerned for just the way that Jordan's going to be treated at that environment, especially since it just kind of came out of left field that they would draft a quarterback at that time.
It's weird. And it shook a lot of people. I think including both, I think Rodgers was shook. I don't know. I wish I could have been. It's in those moments that you really wish you could be a fly on the wall, you know, in Aaron Rodgers' house when he sees that.
Oh, yeah. I saw that he had a call with Brett Favre. And that they had, like, briefly discussed that. There wasn't a lot of detail about the nature of the conversation.
I wish I could hear that. That would have been incredible. So who do you think out of all of these quarterbacks that we saw, you know, Burrow, Tagovailoa, Herbert, Love, Hurts, I mean, the list goes on. Who do you think is going to be the greatest value to the team they were drafted to? I guess you could say, like, immediately or down the road. That could be two different answers. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I know that Joe went number one overall and that there's a lot of pressure there. Yeah. But I've never covered a quarterback like that in my life. Just someone who has the mental makeup and then the ability to perform on the field.
Yeah.
It's hard to find those two things together. But Joe's really a football guy. It's he lives and breathes it. It's everything that he is. I've never seen someone that's quite that focused. The only other quarterback that we had that I think I would compare his work ethic and focus to is Danny Etling. Danny obviously hasn't been as successful, unfortunately, but he's sticking around on the practice squad making it work.
Chrissy did a story on him, and, you know, plug the story because that's up on Twitter and we can put that in the notes. But that was a really good story, you know, and a good idea to talk to him. How did you, like, think of that?
I think the first story I did on him was better whenever he was with the Patriots. That was my first, like, really huge, elaborate feature that I was, like, really, really proud of. So I've talked to Danny before, but as far as Burrow to the Bengals, I feel like he has the weapons that he needs. Like, there is a place wherever there are already some pieces in place to work with. Like, obviously there's some room for improvement if you're number one. If you're a team picking first in the draft, but I think that he has enough weapons around him to work with, and there's obviously still more time for the Bengals this offseason before they get rolling and Burrow actually takes the field for the first time. But I think just the biggest takeaway from that is that Joe Burrow is not a system quarterback. He's always been in a position of adversity, really, because he had to come off the bench from Ohio State grad transfer. He walked into LSU, a team that was already doubted, and really just made it happen. But, as far as accuracy was another thing that I was looking at, and I think it's funny because there's a lot of these people in the national media that are like, oh, Joe became so much more accurate between the 2018 and 2019 season. And to an extent, I do agree with that. I think that he did get better. I think
everything got better, though, right?
His overall awareness, internal clock were some things I really saw improve personally, but a lot of people wanted to highlight accuracy. But you also have to look at the drop rate, and the drop rate significantly improved between 2018 and 2019. So a lot of it was on the receivers, and it was so noticeable in practice in 2018, too, just how bad some of the receivers were. So I think there was a lot of improvement there, but I think that Joe is going to go to the NFL, and I think that his college success is going to translate. I know there's been a lot of people that have said, oh, like, he's just a product of the LSU system. But, I mean, he's been around a couple places. very confident in himself, and I think that he's kind of the glue that makes it all come together in Cincinnati.
That's so funny that you say that, because everybody that I've ever talked to around LSU, you know, the last 2 years, whether it's coaches or even their SIDs or whoever, everybody says the same thing about Joe. Like, the message about him never changes. The story is always the same. Yeah, like, and that's, to me, that's crazy, because you can't even find one person that's like, hey, this kid's an asshole, or he's kind of a, you know, whatever. And even when I pushed Blake Ferguson, when he came on my podcast, and I pushed him a little about Joe and the Big Dick Joe hat, you know, that he wore after the Natty, which, you know, was a little, I was kind of like, all right, this rubbed me the wrong way a little bit, the way he was wearing that hat instead of the team hat, right? And so I pushed that Blake. I was like, well, what do you think about that? It's kind of, you know, and he even said, he's like, man, he's confident and he has swagger and that's fine. And we know that, but he's somebody you would follow into battle. Like, that's just the end of it. You know, he's like, guys sit up straighter when he comes into a room, and that's that. So it must've been really cool to be around that and cover his career there.
Oh yeah. No, you can tell that he's really well respected. I was kind of under the impression that maybe he might not be as well received at first, because he's such an outsider coming from Ohio, and he's just kind of a really weird, quirky guy. He's not, I wouldn't call him introverted, but he has no issue being quiet and just minding his own business.
Yeah.
It's a personality that I've never truly come across.
Yeah.
Like, the whole time I was working with him, I was like, this guy's just kind of like a tough nut to crack. Yeah. It's weird.
You just never know what he's thinking.
I guess that he just, he keeps to himself, but then every now and then he'll like bust out a joke or something, just like out of nowhere.
That's hilarious.
Or like start picking at somebody. It's funny.
Funny
to watch.
When you were covering him, because you guys, you know, obviously being an LSU student and you having this inside track to these guys and getting to see a different side, did he ever have like an interesting hobby that you guys uncovered, or some like was he like a karaoke master? Is he like to do puzzles? Like, was there anything ever that surprised you that you heard about him or that he copped to having as a hobby? I've always been curious about this.
There's really nothing in specific, because he's literally so,
like, just he just says football.
On football. Yeah, like,
I can see that.
Yeah, but the only thing that I can think of is whenever he like went off at SEC Media Days and he was talking about like watching YouTube videos of like black holes, and then I like scrolled through his Twitter retweets one day because I just felt like it.
Yeah.
And there was like something about like SeaWorld, like, so, you know how, like, the whole blackfish thing, like, yeah, whales should not be kept in captivity. Mm-hmm. So, like, based on, like, scrolling through his Twitter, I have determined, just based on what I've seen from that, that he's, like, very concerned with animal rights, and he seems to be very left-wing politically.
Interesting.
Although I've never heard him speak on those things.
Right. But he's tweeted or retweeted.
No whale conversations, no liberal conversations. But, like, from what I can gather, like, and I can tell that he's not, not a big NCAA guy.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's, yeah. He likes to advocate for the little guy. He's got a big heart. I could see that. Like, you could see when he talks about, even at the Heisman, he was talking about his hometown. You know, you can just see he has this empathy towards things that aren't right. Like, he wants to fix them. Do you know what I mean? Like, he just...
I couldn't believe he was crying, though.
Oh, my God. I was crying.
I had an engine to cry. Like, if you would have told me that Joe Burrow has never cried in his life, I'd be like, okay, I believe it.
No, that was life-changing speech. And that's why I grapple with this issue. Not issue, but this thing I have with him about, you know, the hat he was wearing, and, like, how I felt like as soon as that game was over, the Joe Burrow brand turned on. But then you see things like that. That was the most epic Heisman speech I think we'll ever hear. For the wherewithal of a 20-something-year-old to talk about poverty rate in his hometown, I mean, that's, like, you'll never see that again, you know? Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's the kind of guy that can be very easily, like, misperceived.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just put it that way. And he's not, like, the super warm, cuddly, like, outgoing figure that we see some of these players as in the media.
Yeah, that's fair. I could see that. Well, I'm excited to watch him, and hopefully, you know, we'll get a regular. See, I love the NFL's proceeding with the schedule releases today. Did you have to do anything based off of the schedule release information? Did you look at that yet, or?
No, I really haven't looked into it that much. I think that Mike has handled most of our stuff as far as the schedule release. I do know, obviously, that it came out today, though. And it's kind of like, it kind of gives you, like, cautious optimism, I guess. Although I think that if states are reopening, like at least in phase one at this point, mm-hmm. like almost all of them, and if we're making progress there, then it's kind of hard to believe that unless there's some like crazy dramatic change that football season will be delayed.
Yeah. You would think, or shortened, or pushed back. I mean, that's what we keep hearing about college football, is that, you know, we're looking at a later start date or a truncated season. But I do know that these colleges are pushing like all hell to get this season in, because for most, a lot of schools, like, this is the main source of revenue, is this college football, you know, in the fall. So if they don't play, it's going to be...
Especially for LSU.
Yeah.
That is a moneymaker.
Yeah.
Like, there are so many things and other programs that are basically supported by the money that football brings in.
Yeah.
So I think the effects of canceling a college football season are a lot more catastrophic than people think.
Yeah.
I think with just coronavirus in general, like, I understand... Like, I haven't been very outspoken about this, but I understand... precautions. Mm-hmm. Yes, I have loved ones just like you and everyone else mm-hmm. does who could be susceptible to it. But at the end of the day, like, basically by the whole quarantine, what you were trying to do in essence is to shut everyone off and hope that it in one wave that it will all die off. And literally if one or two people, even if only one or two people in this country had it, the whole thing could start back up again. So the whole idea of the quarantine, like, yes, you can flatten the curve. Yes, you can do this. Like, yes, it does have some positive effects, but you cannot totally wipe out the virus.
No, by nature, you can't do that. Yeah.
It's not going to happen. It's math.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, if the government is not doing enough economically, and there's only so much it can do still, like, you could, depending on how long you shut it down, you could literally be looking at another Great Depression. And that is so much worse for everyone. Like, I feel like the whole concept of herd immunity and being cautious and being reasonable and reopening slowly, but eventually fully reopening, like within maybe the next few months or so.
Yeah.
That is so much more important, I think, than most people think.
I agree with you. And
I had someone ask me the other day, they were like, why are you going to the beach? And I was like, why are you asking me why I'm going to the beach? And the other thing is, so you might be concerned about the beach, but the worst place you can go is the grocery store.
Yeah.
And everyone is in that grocery store.
Yeah.
And for anyone who may be wondering, when I was at the beach, I went with a couple people that I know who have been quarantining, and we were way far apart from everyone who was there, and it was Galveston. There were not that many people there.
Yeah, the pictures I saw, they was very, very empty, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Trust me, you're preaching to the choir, but here in California, we have a very different... take on how all this stuff has been going down. So it has been quite the journey, but hopefully, and I agree with you. I mean, I think it's a pandemic. It's a virus. It's going to spread the way that it spreads through our society. Like, that's what these things do. They go through the community, they go through people, and then we have to come out the other side of it. But pretending that you could stop it or shield yourself from it completely is just, it's not, that doesn't make any sense to me at all. So I feel you, but hopefully we're coming, you know, through to another side where we'll see some people coming out, things opening up, and starting to get our immune systems out there. I heard vitamin D is a big thing that we need to fight this. So I'm urging people to go out and get some sunlight, you know, walk around the block or do whatever.
Oh, yeah. I have a raging sunburn because I'm naturally pale, and I fell asleep in the sun for 4 hours yesterday.
Oh, boy.
So
yeah, fell asleep. Yep, that's what...
Yeah, yep. That's what happened.
Yep, that's... Oh, boy. Well, I'm going to go fall asleep in the sun tomorrow, maybe.
You should.
I might.
I highly recommend.
I might. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Hopefully we're going to... So Chrissy and I have crossed paths at several events, but we've never actually, like, sat down and met in real life. But we've bonded over the phone and text, it's crazy. We've been at all these same events, like the Natty and Senior Bowl. But this time, I'm actually going to come out for a Saints game, and we'll definitely cross paths for college football, hopefully. So, but you're coming back on later, and we might make this like a monthly thing where we check in with Chrissy, you know?
Yes, I would love that. I always have so many things to say.
You really do. Like, this is a great opinionated segment, and I appreciate it. And your quarterback knowledge is obviously invaluable. So we'll definitely have to talk again.
Yeah, I have a really hard time keeping my opinions to myself.
See, but myself. I feel like that's where we'd be a good team because I will keep rein you in and but let you go as much as you need to. It's a good balance. It's a good balance.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again for coming on, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. I'll see you.